Microphone. Good morning, everyone. The time is 10:01, and I will call the October 28th meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection to order. I'd like to welcome everyone for being here today. It's great to have such a packed house. Good to see everybody. We'll start off as we normally do with our invocation and pledge. So I'll ask everybody to please rise, and I'll ask Adam Winningham of the Huntsville Fire Department to come lead us in prayer.
Let us pray. Dear Father God, I thank you for this amazing opportunity and this group of men and women, God, to represent an awesome organization, Lord. Lord, I pray that as they gather, as they discuss regulations and policies, Lord, that they look at ways to protect the community of which we serve, Lord, that you would guide and direct them through their decision-making, Lord, as we serve a mighty community, as we represent you in all that we do, God. Lord, we ask for your healing hand and your guidance over all the ones that are dealing and overcoming the COVID pandemic, and especially the Dallas firemen as they are overcoming that miracle in which you provided protection for them, God. I pray that you continue to bring them home. So, Lord, I pray that through this meeting, God, that we will honor you in all that we do. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
And before we get too far away from the invocation, I'll also just ask for thoughts and prayers. Apparently, there was a volunteer firefighter that might have died in the line of duty last night over in Titus County. Really don't have a lot of details. This was handed to me right before we started. But just keep that fire department in your thoughts and prayers as well. Now, if you'll please face our United States flag and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now our Texas flag.
Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Please be seated.
The squeaky wheel.
We moved to item two.
Agenda item number two, roll call and excuse of commissioner absences. So if you could please identify that you're here when your name is called. Commissioner Cantu?
Here.
Commissioner Copney?
Here.
Commissioner DeVille?
Here.
Commissioner Glenn?
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton?
Here.
Commissioner Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Lowell?
Here.
Commissioner Morgan? I'm here. Thank you. Commissioner Sharma? Commissioner Smith?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Smith notified us he had a work commitment and would be unable to make it today.
Thank you. Commissioner Steelman?
Here.
Commissioner Vandegrift?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Vandegrift notified us he had a work commitment and would be unable to make it today.
And finally, Commissioner Wilson?
Here.
Thank you.
Commissioners, I'd like to consider an excuse for Commissioners Vandegrift and Smith. They did let us know well ahead of time that they were going to have work conflicts and not able to be here today. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Who made the motion?
I'll second.
Commissioner Hamilton made the second. Commissioner Jones second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Item three.
Agenda item number three, recognition of retiring agency employee Paul Maldonado.
Paul, you want to come up here to the center, please? Front and center. So everybody may or may not know, Paul Maldonado has been the compliance division chief for the last 9 years with the agency. Prior to that, he started his career with the Austin Fire Department, did 25 years here in Austin, made it up to the rank of assistant chief, chief of staff. He retired from Austin to accept the position of state fire marshal, where he served for over 7 years. Before coming here to the Commission on Fire Protection. So Paul's made the decision to retire. We're happy for him. I'm grateful to Paul for his assistance helping me in the first almost 2 years that I've been here. I couldn't have done it without his help, but we wish him well and wanted to recognize him for that. Small class, and appreciate all your service. Thank you.
Well, I actually wrote a book, and but fortunately, I'm going to just read some excerpts out of it. And I'm going to read, so I apologize. How do I pull this off? I'm going to read, so I apologize in advance. As I've been practicing retirement, in the past, I would have made a speech and gone without notes. But since I've been practicing retirement, it's like, oh, okay, I can read now. So and if you'll indulge me, Jesus, the cliff notes. One thing I'm not going to miss is the traffic, because, man, that was terrible coming in this morning. let's see. It's been my honor and my privilege and my great fortune to have worked, over 40 years in the fire service as a public servant. Like Mike said, I worked 25 years with the Austin Fire Department, 9 years at the Fire Marshal's Office, and 9 years here at the Commission. I stopped counting 30 years ago or 20 years ago. But it's really been my great fortune to do this. And I've come to find out that one of the most important things in one's life is our livelihood. And by that I mean the work that we do, the work that you do. It's really important. There's other important things to life, but work is one of the big important things. The work that I've been able to do with the fire service has been a godsend for me, because I've been able to do two things that I've found are very, very important. And one is service, help to others. And service and help to others, it's baked into the fire service. It's baked into the work of a firefighter. And so that was taken care of, and thank God that that's what somehow I fell into this work. And that was very, very important as I look back on the years. The other important thing that I have discovered about life and about work is relationships. And so I want to talk a little bit about relationships. I ended up kind of making speaking extemporaneously, but I want to get to my notes, because I think that some of the things I was thinking about were pretty important. So as you are all here working in the fire service, and as I'm making my transition into retirement, I ask you not to forget the people that you work with, and not to forget how important those relationships are with the people that you work with. And remember, some people don't have work. There are some people that are jobless, and that's so extremely unfortunate, and it's awful, but it's a whole story, another story unto itself. And then those of us that are in the fire service, thank God we're here, right? Because not only are we helping others, and we're helping ourselves, and it's a life of fulfillment. It's a well-lived life, those of us that have been able to enjoy the fire service. And not to say that money and the compensation that you get for the work isn't important, but there's treasures of relationship, and that is really, really important. The fire service is a place where, like I said, you can help others, but you can also build on the relationships, and that is so very important. And that's the reason why I say that I'm so very fortunate for having been a firefighter and for my career in the fire service, because I've come to find out that money is important, paying the bills is important, other things are important, but man, the relationships that we make is so extremely important. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the relationships like when you greet each other and say hi and go about your way. I'm talking about things that go really, really deep when you work with people and you recognize their value and their dignity, and they in turn recognize your value and your dignity. That's the relationship that I'm talking about. And so it's been my great fortune to be able to work with each one of you and to tap into those relationships. And I will be remiss if I don't say that in particular, the compliance team here at the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, guys, if y'all, you know, those of you that are here, I'd like you to stand up, because these are the relationships that that made the world of difference as I transitioned into my retirement. And so I'm just really, really appreciative of you guys and then the rest of the fire service here, because I have had a well-lived life, and in particular in work, it has been such a tremendous treasure and a blessing for me. And so I thank you all for the time that you've given me and for the recognition, and thank you all for, you can have a seat now, guys. Thank you. And I wish you all very well, and some of you have my contact information, so, you know, if you ever need anything, if you ever want to chat or, you know, just say hi, please don't hesitate. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Paul.
Agenda item number 4, commission meeting minutes of July 14th and 15th of 2021.
Commissioners, you've hopefully had a chance to review the minutes from the workshop on the 14th and our last commission meeting on the 15th. I'll entertain a motion to approve those.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Jones, second by Commissioner Copney. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Agenda item number 5, the Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on October 28, 2021 during the commission meeting and provide a report relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee relating to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plan. We have nothing to report at this time.
Okay, nothing to report on that. We'll move on.
Agenda item number 6, reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organizational purposes, functions, activities, and objectives, including reports from the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the State Association of Firefighters, the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, and the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshals Office.
Okay, we'll start with the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. Is anyone here to report?
Morning. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. The TFCA recently conducted our annual elections, and we're happy to announce that Austin Fire Chief Joel Baker was elected to serve as our third vice president, which means that Chief Baker will serve as the president of TFCA in 2025. Appreciate Joel coming in from out of our state and becoming immediately involved and engaged in all things with the Texas Fire Service. We're also able to elect Irving Fire Chief Victor Conley to serve as our TML representative. We're happy to have Victor back on our board and Irving represented. ESD director, this was a newly created position. Bear County ESD 5 Fire Chief Gary Estep was elected. Central Region Director, Lampasas Fire Chief Jeff Smith was elected. North Region Director, Jerry Duffield from DeSoto was reelected. Southeast Region Director, Palmer Buck from the Woodlands, also reelected. Panhandle Region, this was open after the recent retirement there of Bob Watson. Randall County Fire Chief Joe Koch was elected. Our Valley Region Director, Jarrett Shelton, was reelected. Registration for our programs continues to set new records. Basically, everything that we think in the past we've kind of reached a high water mark, we find out we have not. Our Fire Chiefs Retreat in San Antonio in December has 91 people registered. Our second in command class in College Station in January has 61. And we created a new program targeting admin professionals, fire service admin professionals. This will be our first year to offer it. The TFCA has absorbed the cost of tuition for all attendees, and we already have 66 people registered. It was capped at 65, and we reached that, and we've got several phone calls about people that were still wanting in, so we've increased that now to a cap of 100. And our Fire Chiefs Academy, which we just held a couple of weeks ago in San Marcos, the one in Grapevine already has 41 people pre-registered for that as well. So things are going well for the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, and we appreciate the support of the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Texas State Association of Firefighters, we had our convention as well in Rockwall, and it was actually taking place when we were here for the last commission meeting, where Commissioner Jones and I both traveled back from Rockwall down here to Austin and went back. The day that we were here is when we had the elections, nominations, and subsequent elections for positions. President John Riddle was reelected. Secretary Treasurer Brandon Day was reelected. Each of the district vice presidents that had served, except for District 2, which essentially covers the eastern half of the Metroplex out towards the eastern border of the state, and there in East Texas. Bo Simpson is a current firefighter with the Plano Fire Department, past president of that local, and he was elected as the district vice president for District 2. I was reelected as a trustee for the state, and then Mike Silva is a new trustee from Mission, Texas. And so we're paying attention to the special sessions that have been taking place. There hasn't been a lot of legislation that has had a direct impact on the fire service and the firefighters. Paying attention to the upcoming primaries with the way redistricting has taken place and some of our friends of the fire service, where they fall in their districts. We hired a new position, a deputy legislative director, and his name is Chase Frugé. And for anyone that's been around Senator Creighton's office, he is worked on Senator Creighton's office for the past 6 or 7 years. And so we're happy to welcome Chase to our team. And then finally, just this past week, we had an annual service and political training that was held just up the road here in Pflugerville, and it was well attended. And we had labor leaders from across the state, all four corners of our great state, was represented here with the Texas State Association of Firefighters. And with that, appreciate the chance to give a report.
Thank you. The State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Mr. Chairman, I got a note from Tim Rutland. Excuse me, Tim Rutland, the executive director. He's going to be in Houston today, so he's not going to be able to attend. His statement was, we have begun to transition to online testing for all certification exams. We are still partnering with TEKS for testing in some locations and in different situations. Development is underway for the new SFMA data management system, in addition to interfaces of both members and staff. The final product will also include a new website. Planning is underway for the annual conference in Beaumont, June 24 through 29. We're anticipating to be back in full conference schedule for the 22 conference. If anybody ever needs anything from the SFFMA, give me a call or give Rutland a call, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Texas Fire Marshals Association. The Texas Association of Fire Educators. Texas A&M Forest Service.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wes Moorhead. I'm Assistant Director for Texas A&M Forest Service, also currently serving as the Fire Chief. Mark Stanford held this position previously. He has moved over to our Director Suite, and so now I've assumed that position. I'm joined today with Interim Director Al Davis. He is here right there raising his hand. So Al is currently on loan to us from TEKS, of TEKS fame. Thank you, Commissioner Coatney, for allowing Al to serve in that role. We're unsure exactly how long Al will be with us as interim, but we have not started a nationwide search for a new directorship. As far as fire goes, wildland fire, Texas has been pretty quiet this year. That afforded us as an agency the opportunity to return the favor to other states. Western states burned hot and heavy, as y'all saw through the summer. We were able to mobilize 259 Texas A&M Forest Service firefighters to support those western states. From June through October, we also sent out an additional 22 pieces of equipment. This served not only as good training for our staff, but also repaid the debt. All of those states that we supported have sent resources to Texas in our time of need. As far as the outlook for fire, we are expecting dry conditions to set in through the fall and into winter, particularly in West Texas, Trans-Pecos, Panhandle. We're seeing that right now. It does look like La Nina will set up as well. Typically, La Nina gives us a lot of heartburn when it comes to wildfire. We get really intense winds. When you couple that with the underlying drought that we're seeing build, it creates for a significant wildfire season. So we are gearing up for such going into fall and winter. I think that is all I have to report. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy to have you guys back in the room. The National Fire Protection Association.
Mr. Chairman, I passed out a handout from Kelly Ransdale. She was unable to be here today, but she sent a two-page update for your reading pleasure whenever it's convenient.
Okay. Thank you. The Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts.
Yes, hello. My name is Clay Avery. I'm the Assistant Executive Director of the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, or SAFE-D, if you don't want to say that whole thing. We're a state association of emergency services districts. A lot is happening in the ESD world right now. As far as our association, we just got through with a fall event to try to make up for the lack of a fall 2021, or the lack of an annual 2021 conference that we had to cancel because of COVID. Chief Wisco was a very wonderful and gracious presenter about commission updates. It was a very well-received presentation. We're very thankful to him for that presentation. And we got a quick turnaround. Our 2022 conference is going to be in February at the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center in Round Rock in February 17th through the 19th. All are welcome. Anyone with interest in the ESD world, wanting to find out more about emergency services districts, are welcome to be there. If you have topics you'd like to see addressed, please let me know. We're an open door policy here. Otherwise, we are just monitoring the landscape for ESDs. We spent much of the special session trying to get American Rescue Plan Act funds allocated for ESDs. As many of you know, they went directly to cities and counties and not special districts. So ESDs didn't see a lot of that money that some of the city departments and counties were able to get from the feds. So we tried, and we were not as successful as we would have liked, but tomorrow's another day. Otherwise, I will take any questions if you have any about ESD safety or anything else.
Okay. Thank you. The Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan, a current chair for the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium, or the Texas CIPSE Consortium. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development, especially through the CIPSE's agency accreditation and professional credentialing programs. 12 departments in Texas have obtained accredited status, including 3 DOD departments, and 88 individuals have obtained chief fire officer designation in the state. CIPSE consortium participants range from civilian analysts, administrative battalion chiefs, and fire chiefs from fire departments of all sizes across the state. We'll be hosting an online webinar and video conference starting at 1 p.m. Central on Thursday, November 4th. The program is free and will be posted on YouTube. Topics to be covered include NFPA's Guide for Firefighting and their Standard on Continuity, Emergency, and Crisis Management, State Office of Risk Management's Continuity Council, and updates from the parent organization, Center for Public Safety Excellence. The members of the CIPSE are still involved in the development of NFPA 1022, which is the profile on fire analysts, which will include a chapter or a guide on onboarding civilian civilian staff onto fire departments. The annual CIPSE Excellence Conference is scheduled to be in person only for March 22 to 25th in Orlando, nearby Disney World. Registration is now open with early bird prices. I encourage those to sign up now as the conference does sell out and so do flights since it's around spring break. I'm willing to take any questions and I do have flyers for the video conference next week.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Chair? Thank you. And the State Fire Marshal's Office. Okay.
Moving on. Agenda item number 7, subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Commissioners?
Mr. Dillon, I have one item I'd like to add, and it's related to certification process for people from out of state, out of the state of Texas who are coming in to apply for certification. I'd like us to look at the approximate timeline it takes to complete that from the inception or reception of the request to be certified through the terminal process of actually issuing certifications, what the process involves. I would also like to know if there's a crosswalk option that has been created other than IFSAC seals and any other relevant information to the process of getting people from out of the state of Texas certified to become state firefighters in the state of Texas.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay.
Agenda item number 8, future meeting dates.
Commissioners, I think Deborah has some dates for us to look at.
Okay, for January, the 19th for the workshop and the 20th for the commission meeting. 19th, 20th.
I have a question. When we consider future meeting dates, how flexible are we as far as being able to move those dates or... And so that was, and I was actually, based on that, I was expecting that we were going to be meeting the 26th and the 27th.
Yeah, because TEA is meeting.
Okay. We've just got the State Association has a conflict that week. That's why I was, okay.
Yeah, that's always been a problem, and especially with our attendance being what it's been, which is great.
Right.
The second option of not using this room, this would be impossible, just from experience. So the room is a big deal. Commissioners, any major, I know we had the one potential conflict, any other major conflicts with any of those proposed dates? And again, I realize we're kind of limited and our hands are somewhat tied as to what options we really have to exercise. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Deborah.
Agenda item number 9, report from Commission Representative to the Homeland Security Council.
This is Commissioner Vandegrift, correct? And he's not here with us today?
Right, and he was unable to make their last meeting. So.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on.
Agenda item number 10, report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
There's nothing new to report this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 11, report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat McAuliffe. I'm the chairman of the Curriculum and Testing Committee, and we wanted to bring to you some recommendations for some new members to our committee. These will be replacing members that have served us for many years, including Randy Pearson from the Killeen Fire Department and Bill Hoagland from the Pantex Fire Department. Both of them submitted their resignations during the summer. We posted for applications for new members to the committee. We received a total of 10 applications. I think most people know how hard we work, and that may have scared the numbers away a little bit, but we are a working committee. We went through the process. We narrowed those 10 down to two positions. The first position we are recommending is Harold W. or Buddy Rice from Deer Park Fire Department, and Douglas Mathajitz from the Corpus Christi Fire Department. So we would encourage that you would support our review and appointment to these two members to the Curriculum and Testing Committee.
Okay. The second name was what, sir?
Mathajitz. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'll spell it. M-A-T-T-H-I-J-E-T-Z. Nickname Alphabet. So.
Okay. Staff, is that, I guess, is that something that we need to put on a future agenda item, or is that something we can act on?
You can take action on that today based on the way this agenda is posted.
Okay. Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Someone.
I have a motion by Commissioner Jones to accept.
I'll second.
A second by Commissioner DeVillis. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
And a follow-up report, just want to let you know that we are continuing to make changes, updating the ARF curriculum and the fire officer curriculum to the most recent NFPA standards. As you all are well aware, as the standards change, that constitutes a change in curriculum to make sure that we are aligned with the new NFPA standard. And with that information, I just want to also remind you that with the NFPA's proposed consolidation of numerous standards into one standard, that's going to have a big impact on virtually all of our certifications that we offer. We do have information on the phase-in period as to when these will occur, and that's something that we will be looking at. We also will be looking at new certifications. As many of you know, there was a request for fire marshal, a voluntary fire marshal certification. We will be looking for members to serve on that subgroup here coming up shortly. We've also had requests for voluntary certification in some of the special ops operations, ropes, vehicle rescue, things of that nature. So we're looking at that as well. I just want to remind everyone that both of those are entwined in this consolidation of these NFPA standards. So while people may think, let's just run out there and get it done, if we do that within a year or two, we're going to turn right around and redo the whole thing, because that's when the new standard is going to be consolidated. So I guess what I'm asking is for a little bit of understanding and a little bit of patience. We know we need these things. We know that they're desired by the Texas Fire Service, but we don't want to duplicate our work.
Sure.
And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Pat, I want to say thank you for letting me sit in on your last committee meeting. I'm almost ashamed to say that was the first one I've attended in all of my involvement with different levels with the Fire Commission, but it was very eye-opening. You know, I can honestly say you guys are definitely in the trenches on some of this stuff, and I appreciate the work that you do. It is very laborsome and tedious, and it was very eye-opening for me to attend. So thank you for letting me sit in with you guys.
Absolutely. Any of you are welcome anytime.
Agenda item number 12, update from the Chapter 435 and Chapter 427 ad hoc committees.
Mr. Chairman, so Commissioner Mike Jones, sit as the chair of the Chapter 435 Firefighter Safety Committee. And since we last met, we've been meeting monthly here in Austin. And the committee members, to remind everybody, is Chief Deere, Chief Wisco, Chief Kerwood, Tim Gardner, Brad McCutcheon, Jason Barnes, Chief Baker, Chief Fite, Tim Rutland, Commissioner Hamilton, Cliff Grant, Joyce Gwynn, Jim Reedy, Rick Wallace, and myself. And as from the last, if you guys remember from the last commission meeting, we discussed to stakeholders, reach out to the stakeholders and have them submit names. And so with that, that's who we come up with as a committee. And like I said, we've been meeting every month. And where we're at in the 435 committee, we're making pretty good work. And we're just going basically section by section, running it as we would a commission meeting. We'll have a motion if there is a change or to accept it as it's read. And then any discussion, the second, any discussion, and then a majority vote. A lot of good discussion, a lot of good work, and we're hoping and we feel like we meet again in December, and we're hoping to maybe have something to come back to the commission in January's meeting. We had a subcommittee meeting yesterday with the, because as Commissioner Hamilton attends our committee meetings, I attend his just because we feel like they're working pretty closely. So we had a subcommittee because of some wording that we had. We're identifying and creating a definition for a regulated entity because the statute and the rules say a fire department. Well, there's a lot of different things that fall within the commission other than just fire departments. So we're defining regulated entity. With that, we made some wording that said a regulated entity shall provide, maintain. And so when I attended the 427 committee, it was identified that training entities in particular, they don't always provide the gear. And so we got together and created some language that we'll take back to our committees to see how it works. But from the 435, working really well. Staff's been great with involvement. A lot of great involvement from all stakeholders. And I feel like we're moving pretty well. Like I said, hopefully I'll have something to come back in the January meeting to present to the commission.
Excellent. Any questions for Commissioner Jones?
Did I forget anything? Anybody that's on the committee?
Thank you for that report. Commissioner Hamilton?
Yes, sir. On 427, basically the same thing. We're working closely with the 435 because so much of it's kind of intertwined. From visiting with Chief Wisco, we do have a pretty good task on our hands, and especially with the consolidation of the NFPAs, we've really got some things to look at. We are going to try to extend ours to some two-day gatherings, and we'll do that in December sometime. It's hard to get here and get lined out and then take a quick lunch and then try to get out of here and beat the traffic, so we're going to start working more days. My committee is Brad Easley, Chris Anger, Christina Foley, George Malone, Jacob Smith, James Pitt, Mike Moffitt, Paul McCuff, Paul Siebert, Richard Seldaro. We've asked Rick Wallace to step in, and Stephen Malley. So we are working diligently to try to put this together and see what our results are going to be able to hopefully give something to the full commission in either January or February. I do not think at this time we'll try to do them at the same time. I think 435 may be able to be finished and have a report to the commission prior to us, but it may be in the April meeting before we come up with a full plan. So any information that anybody needs to know or wants to know will holler at me or Mr. Wisco and our Commissioner Jones, and we'll try to help in any way that we can. We are limited on space, so we're not really giving out the times and the dates, but we're working on it. We're going to make something happen.
Okay. Questions for Commissioner Hamilton? Thank you.
Agenda item number 13, possible final adoption of proposed amendments as follows. Number 1, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification. And number 2, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 441, Continuing Education.
Mr. Chairman, on number 1, 421, this is for final adoption. If you'll remember, made some changes to this rule that would allow the current committees that are in place to continue working until the new rules related to committees and how they're going to function and be made up or finalized. So these rules that you're considering today would just allow these committees to continue working, so we don't have them just a complete shutdown around here.
I'll entertain a motion for 13-1.
So moved.
I have a motion by Commissioner Jones.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Coatney. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
And number two is some changes that would require that 2 hours of the mandatory 18 are for a required review of the injury report each year. So this comes from the Health and Wellness Committee. There's a lot of work that goes into the injury report. They presented at the last meeting and feel strongly that just encouraging the fire service to read these injury reports, understand how the injuries are occurring, see where the trends are, mandating that they spend 2 hours a year just reading this and learning about how we could prevent it could go a long way. So it's not an increase to CE hours, it's just specifying what 2 hours of it need to be.
Any discussion on that? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion. So move.
Motion by Commissioner second. Cantu, second by, I believe, Commissioner Hamilton. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Agenda item number 14, request from Chief Brandon Seary, Heath Department of Public Safety, regarding possible implementation of a field training firefighter certification.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, Chief Seary notified us early this week that he had a work commitment that was going to prevent him from being here. He's going to try to work with us and reschedule his request for a future meeting, hopefully January.
Okay. Do we want to table this or take no action?
I would just take no action at this point. Okay. And we'll put it back on here when he can be here.
Okay. Thank you.
Agenda item number 15, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 437, fees regarding IFSAC seals.
Mr. Chairman, this is a request from staff. As you know, we collect a small fee for the IFSAC seals that individuals can obtain once they're certified. When this started in 97, that fee was $5. I want to say it was in 2006 or 7. It was increased to $15. This is the one and only fee that this agency collects that we're able to retain and use to the benefit of the agency as we need, whether it's for equipment or educational purposes or whatever. We're asking you to consider increasing this fee to $30. Just to provide us a little more money. We don't seem to have much luck at the legislature getting more money when we need it. This would provide us about an additional $120,000 a year that we could use to make IT improvements and other improvements here that we desperately need.
Okay. Commissioners, any discussion?
What's the current fee, Chief?
The current fee is $15 per seal.
So you want to double the fee?
We want to take it to 30, yes.
And just to make a point, this is a voluntary thing, right? Nobody
yeah,
is
I mean,
forced
you're not,
to get ISAC
seals.
They choose to do it on their own.
It's something that they have to want. They can request it.
Right.
And the departments don't pay for the ISAC seals. The individuals pay for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes from out of state, correct? From yeah. firefighters coming to Texas.
We do have a lot of out of state, even out of the United States folks that come to Texas for the training. Just for the sole purpose of obtaining the IFSAC seal.
Sure. Chairman, I'll make a motion.
Okay, have a motion by Commissioner Jones to approve.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Morgan, sorry Bob. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Agenda item number 16, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 455, Minimum Standards for Wildland Fire Protection Certification.
Mr. Chairman, this is a discussion for a possible publication. It's a request from the Texas A&M Forest Service to allow their online hybrid course, and I believe Chief Moorhead is here to discuss that.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, we made this request as we've seen that online courses are sufficient to train the entry-level firefighters. This is a hybrid course. We have adopted it fully in our agency to train our staff, hybrid being all the main components of the course are online, but it has a capstone of one field day. That field day incorporates not only a written test, but also a skills assessment test. It's one that the fire service has indicated they have appetite for to go to online. I think over the last 2 years, we've seen a migration toward online whenever available. And since we've adopted it in our agency, we are suggesting y'all consider the same. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about that.
This is what was once called Fire in the Field. Is that that program?
That's exactly right. Okay. Correct. Yep. And it is Fire in the Field with an additional course. I believe I-100 is not included in Fire in the Field, right. But it's a very similar class. Yes.
Good deal. No, I've got some experience with that one. Took it many, many years ago. Very informational, and it was a very good course.
Good.
Okay. Commissioners, any other discussion? Any questions?
Make a motion to adopt.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Hamilton, a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 17, proposed rule review for the following. Number 1, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 403, criminal convictions and eligibility for certification. Number 2, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 3, Part 13, Chapter 423, Fire Suppression. Number 3, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 425, Fire Service Instructors. And number 4, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 439, Examinations for Certification.
Commissioners, just real quick in the middle of this one, I've been asked that we kind of speak up. The people in the far back of the room are having a difficult time hearing us, so we can maybe move the microphones closer and do a better job of verbalizing what we're saying just in a little bit louder tone so everybody can be sure to hear. So, I normally don't have a problem with that, but anyway, I just want to make sure everybody's able to hear us back there.
Mr. Chairman, I'm passing around a document, and we're going to talk about sunset recommendations later on in my agency report, but one of the sunset recommendations was that we do a better job, a more meaningful and practical review of our rules. In the past, it was a 5-year requirement. That requirement is now every 4 years. So we've adjusted our schedule. Clearly, based on the change, we're behind in some areas. And so what you have on your agenda today are the first four. What I've handed out is an internal agency policy for how we're going to handle rule reviews. And basically what it's explaining is that we're going to have to put at least 3, if not 4, on every meeting agenda. And you kind of see the way it's going to play out. We'll put it on here. You all can decide how you want to conduct that review, whether you just want to do it here in a meeting or you want to assign an ad hoc committee if it's a larger rule or a controversial rule. It'll go to one of your advisory committees of your choice at some point. It'll come back here for a second meeting with any proposed changes. Then it'll be followed up at a third meeting for any final adoption or further discussion. So we've adopted an internal policy based on a sunset recommendation. I wanted you to be aware of that. And we're going to stick to that when it comes to scheduling these as far as full review for you all. You'll decide how you want to review them, and we'll follow the schedule as it starts to play out. But I just want you to understand why you're going to start seeing these on every meeting agenda. It's something we're required to do, and so we're trying to accomplish one of our sunset recommendations already.
Commissioners, any discussions or questions? Okay. I appreciate the work on this. You're right. We are checking the sunset box, and, you know, we've kind of made a commitment to start following through and working through some of those, so this is certainly going in the right direction with that. So,
and
thank you.
We'll have some more in-depth discussion when we get to the agency update. But now to number 1 under 17, Chapter 403. Sunset made some specific recommendations to this. Recommendation number 2.6, and I want to just read this onto the record so everybody's clear on what their recommendation was. This recommendation would direct the commission to review its rules in Title 37, Part 13, Chapter 403 of the Texas Administrative Code by September 1, 2021. Obviously, we're behind by a month and a half. As part of the recommendation, TCFP should form an ad hoc committee and work with that committee to develop specific guidelines determining which crimes directly relate to the occupation and how, using Section 53.022 of the Texas Occupations Code. Additionally, the commission should ensure its rules covering procedures for certification denial due to criminal conviction adhere to all requirements in Chapter 53 of the Texas Occupations Code. That's the recommendation they sent. This is what came from the Sunset Commission. You all can do as you please, but I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of the recommendation. This rule was already due for review. We moved it up. It's first on our list here, and it seemed to fit because of the recommendation here, so we made it first on the list. So here we are.
Commissioners, any thoughts or comments?
So I'm assuming in the past this would go to firefighter advisory as far as regular rule review?
In the past it would, yes.
So I would say that would be my motion, send it to firefighter advisory to come back with recommendations.
Okay, I have a motion by Commissioner Morgan and a second by Commissioner Jones to send this one to Firefighter Advisory for further review and recommendation. Any other discussions on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, the next three are simply on here because they're the next three in the need to be reviewed order. No special caveats to them other than they need, they're up for review. Obviously 423 is a big one. It deals with all the certifications. To Commissioner Coatney's request for future agenda items, theoretically we could talk about that, some of that right here. We're not gonna have all the information that you're looking for, but we could have a discussion about some of it here. Clearly continue that throughout this review process and talk about it some more. I've got additional information that I was prepared to give under the agency report, but we could talk about it, I guess, at any point because it's part of certification and
sure.
It would meet that. So. I guess if we want, let's start with the record review process. I think that's the crux of maybe of Commissioner Coatney's request. You give me a second to get to my notes. It is a challenge for the agency at this point, and we're working on some steps to make improvements, and we're losing. So I just want to own that right up front, and I want to lay this out. So the record review process is owned by the training division of the agency. And later in your notebook, you probably already read under agency report, just for the fourth quarter, some of the things that the training division handles is the exam printing, packaging, and shipping. They also handle the exam proctoring across the state. They handle exam grading. They handle any exam question protest. Somebody challenges a question after the test. They handle exam review and updates. They work with curriculum and testing to make changes. They validate the test questions. They conduct the audits of the online training facilities. They do the online training facility audits. They issue the qualification numbers for individuals that need to get certified, both from out of state as well as in state through the academies and such. And they conduct the record reviews. I'll tell you, there are 3.5 staff members that work in the training division. 3.5 because we borrow a staff member from another assignment to assist them with this. In FY21, they conducted, this agency conducted over 22,000 certification exams. of those 22,000 certification exams, 59% of those were written exams. So those exams had to be printed on a copy machine in the hallway of our office space over here by one person, had to be packaged, put together in a box, shipped out to the proctor. We have one proctor on staff. They obviously can't keep up proctoring exams across Texas that way. So we task the 7 compliance staff members with proctoring the exams. So we take them away from doing compliance inspections to proctor exams. The person responsible for the record reviews is responsible for printing the exams. So just in the fourth quarter, there were 5,500 exams administered by our agents. Over 3,800, 3,880 were printed exams. So she spends 5 days a week in front of that printer, printing tests. And then she gets help from one other staff member packaging them in a box, shipping them out. That's a problem. So to try to rectify that, because I don't think that's a good use of our staff time and effort and money to be printing tests all day long, we have to meet security issues for IFSAC. We have to keep our test questions secure. So we had to find a better way to do that. Working with DIR, which is the state's IT agency, we've identified a state contract with a company here in Austin that does all the printing, packaging, and shipping for the state. We've been in negotiations with them, and we are hopeful that starting in January, they will take over the task of all our exam printing, packaging, and shipping. Obviously, just based on the numbers from FY21, that's going to free up a great deal of time for this one or two staff members who are doing that right now. That will allow them to focus on the record reviews a lot more intently, along with the qualification number issue. As far as record reviews, they handle anywhere from 80 to 100 in a quarter. So you're talking about 400 to 500 in a year. When you look at that, there's just a lot of people coming to Texas to get certified. We started looking at that process. What does it take to review a record? It has everything to do with what they submit. Clearly, if somebody's coming from an IFSAC state, you would think that's pretty easy, relatively easy. It is, based on what they submit. So we had a conversation. They went back and looked at that process. What do people need to submit? How do they know what they need to submit? Staff has developed a one-page record review guide, if you will, that we're going to make available to folks that are wanting to come to Texas. Here's what we need you to submit to us. Because right now what they get, they could get a stack of papers like this. They could get a box from somebody with all their records. And there might be 3 pieces of paper in there that are actually useful and practical to the review process. Or they could hand them 2 pieces of paper that said, I was a firefighter in this other state. It was good enough there, ought to be good enough here. And they spend months working with that other state, working with that individual to get the information they need to validate that, compare that to what we do here in the state of Texas. So it's a daunting process. It's handled by 1, sometimes 2 people. And I say sometimes 2 because clearly, based on the number of exams we're doing, 3.5 people are busy grading tests, reviewing protests, reviewing exam questions, updating the curriculum and the questions and things of that nature. The best I can tell you, we're overwhelmed. We've got performance measures that we're required by law, by the legislature to meet. We get in trouble. I don't know what kind of trouble we get in, and I haven't been here long enough to really tell you. I want to find out. We're going to meet our performance measures. The record reviews are necessary, and they're important, and we want to bring more people in. But record reviews aren't a performance measure. So unfortunately, they haven't been the focus. Getting the exams out, getting people tested, getting those exams graded, getting them certified have been the focus. We want to do better. So the things we're doing, number 1, we've created this one-page guide to help people get us the information we need so we can do the record review faster. We've trained more staff to be able to do it. They've got to have the time. We've got to create that time. So we're trying to hand off this printing and packaging and shipping responsibility so that we can free up a great deal of time to be able to do more of the record reviews. And the third thing is, we're just trying to train more staff so that more people here. I've even offered, they laughed at me, but I've even offered, put some of those on my desk and I'll start reviewing them. I think I scared them because they haven't brought any in there yet. But we're at that point. I mean, it's such a problem. I can tell you that they took the entire month of June and half of July to try to clear the plate, and they couldn't, because as fast as they were pushing them out, they were getting two or three more a day, and they just couldn't keep up. A challenge? It's taken 7 months for some people to get something back from us. That's not acceptable, but I can't just wave a wand and fix it either. The best I can tell you, it's a problem, we own it, we're trying to fix it, we're not there yet, but we're working on it. We can get more information, I will bring you more information back. A bigger question may be our whole process. I'll tell you that our process is that anybody, whether you're in Texas and go to a fire academy or you come from outside of Texas, you're going to have to jump through the same hoops to become certified in Texas to be a firefighter. So that's something that we're collectively going to have to look at. Do we want to change our process? We have set the bar. The bar's been set where it is. Do we want to have a different bar for people coming from out of state? Or do we want to have the same bar? Do we want to lower it? What do we want to do with it? I think that's something we're all going to have to decide collectively. Clearly, as staff, we're going to do whatever we're directed to do. We want to help you guys figure out what the right thing to do is. I'm sure staff that does this every day has some great ideas, but we're not going to be able to fix it overnight. And staff can't fix some of it because we work with the rules that are in place. So it is a challenge. We want to fix it. We're going to be as forthcoming as we can. The best I can offer is it's a problem. We know it's a problem, and we're dedicating a whole lot of time. I tell you, Cliff and Joyce are tired of hearing from me because I get an email or a phone call about every third day about this, and I call them and, hey, where is this person at, and what do we need to do? How long till we get them out? And we just can't win. That's the one thing here I haven't been able to get a handle on. And there's a solution, but I can't do anything about it.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the work and the comments. I mean, to me, it's pretty simple. We've identified there's a problem, and we've already taken some steps to start working to make that better. I personally experienced this with a firefighter that I hired from out of state, from Pennsylvania, going back and forth trying to validate what his actual IFSAC number was on his seal, because the copy of the copy of the copy that he provided at his time of employment needed to be verified, because believe it or not, there are people out there that will falsify those documents, and the last thing that I want to do is put somebody on the line that doesn't have the training in the background to back it up.
You wouldn't believe how often that happens.
I know, and I believe it is a very necessary process to make me feel confident that I'm hiring somebody that says what they say they have, and I realize and I appreciate staff in particular working on that one and the back and forth that it took to validate that IFSAC number. And a lot of it falls back to the burden of that new firefighter having to go back to his home state where he was issued that seal and work through it in the background. And, you know, to me, that's not y'all's problem. That's his problem to provide the good documentation that we need to verify that. So I'm just saying there's a lot of different layers to this, and I appreciate the work. And again, I think we're hopefully headed in the right direction. I'm excited to see what the next discussions lead to in this. I agree with you. Certainly there are some gaps that we need to try to fill, and we'll do our due diligence to make sure we do that. Yes, sir.
Chief Wisco, coming from a civil service department, you know, as you're familiar with, you know, we have an authorized strength. My fire chief has a budget, but he also has an authorized strength number, sure, that he can hire up to. And so, you know, independent of how much extra money he might have in his budget, he's limited to the number of full-time positions he's allowed to hire. So you mentioned 3.5 FTE positions. Educate the attendees here today. What's the process for you to be able to increase that 3.5 independent or in conjunction with what your budget is or what savings you might have in other areas? What does it take for you to go from 3.5 to 4, 5, or 6?
Well, and so internally, and we've had to do this recently, we can shuffle employees around based on needs. And I'll talk about some of that later. It's outside of this agenda item, so I can't right now. However, in the last budget session, or in the last session for our budget request, our LAR, of course, as a rookie at the state side of this, I asked for 3 additional staff. we went into that session with that request on the table, but we had two vacant positions. So we had an FTE, our full staffing would have been 31. We had two spots that were vacant. When I came in, I learned that we had those two vacancies because that money had been used to sweeten the pot, to try to keep employees here. They'd use that money to give some salary increases and such to make it better and do more with less, if you will. Rookie mistake, I went into the session asking for more with two vacancies. Legislature took the two vacancies from us, reduced us to 29, and didn't give us any more. I've learned from that. We'll go into the next session full. We'll have 29, but I need more staff. I can ask for it, but I can't go lobby for it. I can't ask. You all as commissioners, the audience, members from the audience, can go to the legislature all day long and ask for stuff. And everybody loves to go over there and hammer the commission. I'd love to have some support over there. I'll distribute what our LAR is and what we really need. I just need some support over there, some people champion for us to get us the help. Because if I can get some more people, we can do more for the fire service. And reality is, we'll bring in more funds for the state of Texas. Because, as I said earlier with the IFSAC money, that's the only fee we collect that we get to keep. Everything else we bring in, we give the state. Plus an additional $1.5 million on top of that we're mandated to bring in. So we need more staffing. That has to come from the legislature. And short of just asking for it on a piece of paper, and I get about 3.5 minutes in front of the Senate Finance to say this is what I need, I need some help getting that message across to the legislature.
And I think that was and I appreciate the answer, and that was my point, I guess, to tie it together where I was going with, and I think we're in agreement, and my understanding of it is where we have a number of fire chiefs in the room that answer to a city manager and with a city council who make the decision on what the budget's going to be. It's you're dealing with the state legislature as the body that makes that decision of how many employees you can have. Okay, thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments, questions?
I have a lot of comments, but that's why I put it as a future agenda item, and sure. I don't want council to tell me I can't say what I want to say. So I'll wait until our next agenda item. Okay. The only thing I can say is that the process you described is archaic. Obviously, technology can be used to improve this, and when we start to talk about this in the next quarter, you know, hopefully that'll be part of the conversation. How do we move forward? I know your people are running at 110 miles an hour all the time, Chief, but at the end of the day, we still got to take care of business, and we got to find a more efficient and effective way to do that. So I'll just make a broad statement. That way I don't get in trouble.
Mr. Jones.
I'll tag on with what Commissioner Glenn said and Chief Wisco. Last several meetings have been a lot more involvement at the meetings, and I would like to see us together as a fire service and the demand that we're requesting from staff and from the commission for the great job they're doing, that we do help as we can to get the staff we need to help them be more efficient, because you know in the time I've been around, like I said, every time you call they're calling, but they're handling 10 other things when you go in the office over there. And you know, it's I think Chief Wisco, with like you said, and he's gonna talk about later, doing the movement he's doing what he can. The staff's doing all they can, but they need help, and I'd just like to see us as a fire service, whatever we can do to help them we see fit, and I'd like to see that happen. So just kind of tagging on what Commissioner Glenn said, and Chief Wisco, you know, it's he's hitting the ceiling with where he's at, and they're asking for help, and we're asking for demands of them. So,
well, if I may,
yes,
you
sir.
Know,
yes,
just what we're dealing with, you know, and I know that the chief's here, and you hear, and I get information all the time about new stations, and you know, things are the influx of people into the state of Texas, you know, which is a tremendous amount of people that have to be taken care of, and departments are having to increase staff and increase stations and increase, and they're trying to do it with the people that they can get. Well, if it's taken, you know, this period of time to get them certified, to get them on a truck or get them somewhere, you know, where they can do it, I'm going to, you know, bleed with them as far as their, you know, needs and the speed of which their needs, you know, and it's just whatever, as a body here, what we can do to help our staff that we depend on so, you know, so much. We just need to take care of, you know, and if it needs to be across the street, you know, or contact information of who you need us to contact and when you need us to contact it on. And we're just coming off of the legislation, so it's going to be a period of time before that happens again. But we need to start the process right now. And, you know, it just, I don't know, you know, it just, they need to know what we do. And on my side of the table, we went out and got all the information and gave it to every person in the legislation in the state of Texas, the number of votes that are in their area that put on gear, no matter whether they get paid for it or don't get paid for it, and then started distributing that information to them. And they fell over, you know. They would rather have those 30,000 votes in that particular area than $500 in their pocket. And they just, you know, it was amazing at the response that we got at the SFFMA, giving those legislators that information about the voting people that wear helmets and gear in their areas, you know. And they paid attention. They paid a lot of attention. Well, now, the way that the state's increasing in population, we got to make it happen, because it goes through here to get these guys the help they need to be able to control what goes on in their areas. So as far as commission, as far as I'm concerned, we're all in. We've got to get this done. We got to get it done quick.
Okay. Any other comments?
No, probably. We probably got a little off the rule review part of that, but we still need to review that. Sure. This rule. So.
Okay, so commissioners, we need to circle back to 17, 2, 3, and 4 to figure out how to move forward with those, how best to move forward. Any thoughts?
I think my first question would be, when you're doing a review, are you making changes? Are there substantial changes?
There can be. I mean, historically speaking, the rule will go to a committee. In the past, most of these rules are called the firefighter advisory. They seek input. I think one of the things Sunset pointed out in their recommendations is we don't seek enough input. So we need to do a better job, and I think that's something that we've already started as far as the communication, the regional meetings and all, trying to solicit input. So we need to get out there what rules are being reviewed, how they can submit comments, which committee you guys select to review them. And maybe we spend a little more time soliciting comments and looking at the particular rules and discussing that. So, you know, it has to be read at least twice before it can be voted on, but it doesn't have to be limited to that, the way I understand the rules. So,
Chief, I'd like this to be part of a workshop to where we're briefed on the rules and given a little bit more in-depth information about it, so we can kind of have a round table about it and discuss it. That way I'd feel a little bit more prepared to actually vote on it.
Sure. We could put this on the January workshop agenda, just the whole rule review process and these four.
And those four, correct.
Right. Okay.
The main thing here is giving everyone and all stakeholders the opportunity to, you know, add their input, you know, or ideas if they wish to share that. So having, you know, many times to meet on this, that gives a lot of opportunity.
I just moved it, that's all.
I'm sorry?
I just moved it, that's all. I wasn't going to say anything.
The more discussion, the better. I will point out, there he is. We've got one public comment I know of for number four, for 439.
Good morning. My name is Woody Dunseith with San Jacinto College, Pasadena, Texas. I spoke to you at the last commission meeting about pass rates on examinations. I think that's germane to the examinations for certification rule review. We'd like to discuss some of the things that we see might be positive changes to rule reviews. I was remiss last time not pointing out I'm a full supporter of the Fire Commission. I provided comments to the Sunset Review Committee. I believe the Commission is doing a good job with the limited resources it has. Chief Wisco did a great job illustrating just how many tests are being administered, 22,000. That's a lot. I would be curious, given the record review backlog, how many of those exams or retests of in-state firefighters or potential firefighters not being able to pass the exam to get certified? Are we backlogging the examination system with a bunch of retests because people aren't able to pass the test? Nevertheless, I believe that we at San Jacinto College and all the training facilities are in this together. As I pointed out last time, we're all commission-approved instructors. The training facility itself has to be commission-approved. We're using a commission-approved curriculum. The commission has delegated the responsibility for the skill testing on behalf of the commission to us. And everybody that goes through a fire academy has to pass the comprehensive exams with the 70 to get out. A lot of people are willing to help the commission. You had 10 people for the curriculum and testing committee. I know that's not a lot. I was one of them. With the workload, maybe the committee just needs to be bigger. If people or if the workload is just so great, you have people that are willing to serve. As Mr. Maldonado pointed out, everybody in the fire service is willing to serve. That's what they want to do. So we are willing as a college to help out the commission in any shape, form, or fashion that we can. I wanted to address on the when I spoke last time about this topic, there were a couple of comments. One of the things was we maybe shouldn't expect everybody to pass the state exam on the first attempt. Well, for those that are not familiar, we have very high stakes testing in the fire service. You get two attempts. If you fail it the second time, you repeat the entire curriculum for whatever the course you were in. That's slightly out of line with all of the health occupation programs. There's a couple that do three attempts, but a lot of them do four, five, six, and even unlimited testing. So it's very high stakes testing. So if it's not designed to be passed on the first attempt, that's what we're forcing students into, essentially. Chief Wisco did point out the change in pass rates before we switched the ops curriculum to the ops testing process to something different. But of course, that doesn't reflect the drop in people that are eligible to be certified. So again, we're trying to be helpful. It sounds like a litany of complaints, but that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is point out it's a serious problem. After I made comments last time, one of the commissioners asked Chief Wisco what we should do, and Chief Wisco's words, well, he ripped the scab off. If it's a scab, the commission knows it's a problem. We know it's a problem. It's costing students that go through fire academies a lot of money to go through fire academies. It's costing the schools a lot of money. A lot of college-based programs are just throwing more hours at the problem. When you throw more hours at the problem, it could cause tuition to go up for the students, but what it definitely does is causes an increase in the amount the state has to pay back to the school. You increase the hours taught, the state pays more tax money to the school to reimburse for those hours taught. And then for the cities that hire civil service, if they can't get somebody on the truck, like one of you was pointing out, because they're constantly having to retest multiple sections of the basic fire academy exam, that they're just paying that person a salary out of taxpayer money without them being able to do the job as a firefighter. Last but not least, on just the testing process, all facilities, there's a commission rule, have to have a 70% pass rate for each course. Now, when we asked about that, that rule is not being enforced because it can't be enforced. Training facilities would get shut down because the pass rates are so low. So I don't think the asking to have the data on pass rates being disaggregated should be a controversial issue. Maybe it needs to be put into this rule. Our sister profession with the emergency medicine, TDSHS, they report by first attempt pass rate, by multiple pass rates, by who provided the training. Each training provider, they provide the pass rate. So on that particular end of it, we talked about it last time. I know there's IT issues that have to be accomplished, but maybe this is the time to just put it in a rule that this information should be published so the citizens of Texas know what pass rates are, know what the situation is with people trying to become firefighters. If we had more Texans becoming firefighters, we might not need to do so many record reviews for people coming in from out of state, would be one thing I might indicate. The questions themselves on the exam. I know the Curriculum and Testing Committee writes questions. We were told at the regional meeting that the staff writes questions as well. From a training facility perspective, at the regional meeting in the Woodlands, we were told at first that the questions must be in all required references. Then it was clarified that they were supposed to be in just the primary references. This is kind of a theme where it's kind of black box. The testing process is very opaque to people that are not on the testing committee, curriculum and testing committee. And so it's very difficult as we go through these things and are trying to improve our pass rates, what we're supposed to do to improve. The curriculum manuals themselves, or at least the HAZMAT one, says that questions can come literally from anywhere. It doesn't have to be in any of the references listed. So it makes it very difficult for us to figure out what books we require students to purchase and how to prepare them for the exams. When we update, or when you folks update curriculum, or when there's a new edition of the book, or there's a new curriculum, or there's a new reference list, there's a long lag time before the testing process gets updated to reflect all that. And I appreciate that that is a tremendous amount of work. But right now it's October, right? When I look up mastery reports of our students, I see the old curriculum objectives. I see the stuff from the previous editions of book. I see the old curriculum objective numbers. So when we have zero students get a question correct, and I have to try and figure out, well, what did we miss? What did we do wrong? I have to look at the mastery report in FIDO at an objective number that is not current, right? So we also had an issue with the HAZMAT curriculum, which was the bane of all training facilities' existence right now, where the curriculum, due to a technical issue, was not posted correctly until late July of this year. So the commission tested students from January 1 till late July, covering stuff that's in a curriculum where it wasn't reflected online in the officially posted curriculum. Now, it's in books, it's in some skill sheets and all that, but I come from a world where if it's not in the curriculum, you can't test on it. But that's neither here nor there at this point. The operations itself, we talked about the numbers of questions, and this is a rule that's part of a component of examinations for certification. The recommended hours for HAZMAT operations is 32. By the chart in the published rule, it should have 50 questions. The response we had received a number of years ago was curriculum and testing, and the commission didn't want the test to be too long in duration, so it was set at 25. So the retests are done at 25 as well. I'm curious as to whether if somebody, like a police agency or whatnot, does a standalone course for operations, if they get the 50 questions. We set up our academies since July or June, I should say, as standalone courses. Awareness, operations, Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2. We weren't treated like that, though. We were treated as they were all lumped in together, so our students only received the 25 questions. We see that that's just not following a rule. If the recommended hours are 32, it should be 50 questions. Most training facilities I'm aware of, at least in the Houston area, have all just thrown more hours at it. We're teaching close to 80 hours of operations. We're still only getting the 25 questions. That would be another area that's ripe for rule review. The validation we talked about, you folks talked about, that the staff are validating questions, and that can be tough, right? When the curriculum changes, when things become out of date or whatnot, it can be tough to write good questions. But when we get feedback from the students and the objective is at the awareness level to identify hazardous materials based on the shape of the container, and they get questions that ask about what is a bag made of, that's not a shape. That's how the shape is constructed. So again, the process seems to be very opaque. So when we have these failures, we have limited information to go by. We understand that there's test security issues, especially since we're writing the own questions and whatnot, but keep in mind that the questions are being written by folks that work in certified training facilities. Yes? So it's not some outside panel that's writing these. It's other training academies, other training facilities that help write the questions. Again, we're all approved instructors by the commission. We're all approved training facilities by the commission. We're using the commission-approved curriculum. We test the skills for the commission. By rule, they have to pass the certification exam comprehensive exam before they can even take the commission test. I had a phrase that I always used when I was in charge of a whole bunch of people, and it was, we can't expect others to do their part if we don't do our part. Now, I mean it when I say I feel that our training facility, our college, we're hand in hand with the commission trying to teach the future firefighters of Texas. But we're not doing our part. Some of that's on us, some of that's on the rules, some of that's just on being busy. But these folks are successfully completing fire academies in the state, but they're unable to successfully pass the state test at a successful rate or an acceptable rate. Taken together, we feel at San Jacinto College that all these issues that are a part of this rule raise unnecessary and unfortunate barriers to entry into an entry-level firefighting career. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. All right, commissioners? Anything? So we still haven't really resolved what we're going to do with 17, 2, 3, and 4. Am I understanding that right?
Well, I think we're going to bring it to the commissioner workshop.
Okay, and that's?
That's probably the safest resolution, I would think, right now. So
I agree. I mean, it does give us some time to process it and go through
it. Kind of dig into it. They can call us with some questions. We can do a little more research and bring some answers to that meeting.
Okay. And you want to put that, was that in the form of a motion?
That's in form of a motion.
All right. Thank you. I must have missed that. I apologize. So a motion by Commissioner Coatney, second by Commissioner Jones, that we review 17, 2, 3, and 4 at our upcoming workshop in January. Any other discussion on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Agenda number 18, report from ad hoc committee regarding advisory committees, including but not limited committee makeup, term limits, and meeting requirements.
Mr. Chairman, I'm passing around a letter related to this agenda item, but Commissioner Cantu's got the.
Yeah, please. Commissioner Cantu, I was asked by Commissioner Stillman at our last meeting to lead an ad hoc committee on committees in response to Sunset 2021. I was joined with Commissioner Coatney, Jones, Smith, and Wilson. I had three committee chairs, Commissioner Sharma, Chief Deere, and Chief McCullough, and then from the agency, Chief Wisco and Deborah Cowan. When I first started out, I asked the chief to reach out to other state agencies to see if there was any language across the state to see if there was anything already in existence. And I myself reached out to two other agencies in the state. And to my surprise, and I think even to Mike's surprise, there's no existing language that kind of addresses this in the sunset that's across the state. So with that, we just started to develop our own language that went for that. Really, in doing it, or putting the language together just to kind of give you some background, it was really to make sure that it met the intent of Sunset 2021. We sent it through the legal channels with the Attorney General just to make sure that we're in compliance with the law. That was number one. Second was to make it directive in nature as the commission, as the governing body, to make it directive, but not so rigid that it didn't provide flexibility in language. So, you know, you'll see the words like may, will, should. So obviously a may is a suggestion, it's a should is a, you know, you should do that unless there's a good reason not to, and will is more directive. Also wanted to make sure that the language was encouraged participation and representation across the stakeholders. I wanted to make sure that that was in there so that you could be, you know, that there was, that was there, the intent was there, that was written that way. So what we have today, did go through the Attorney General's office. It's open for public debate and questioning, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for Commissioner Cantu?
Commissioner Cantu, I think it'd be good for the audience to hear kind of some of the challenges that we had when we started to seek out other commissions across the state and to, so we could replicate what they had, and then we could build our own program. And then that led to these further conversations we had.
No, really, there is no guidance out there. Really, it was kind of going, try and develop yourself. And so, and I know there's some discussion about the length of the terms and things like that. That was really kind of modeled after the state commission process itself for the folks that sit here in the circle. It was just a starting point. I'm open to suggestions, though, but there really was nothing to go by to answer your question.
Thank you.
I reached out to over a dozen agencies, got responses from probably eight. Several of them said, we don't have that. Quite a few of them said, we had the same direction or recommendation from Sunset. We're anxious to see what you do so we know where to start. I relayed that back to Commissioner Cantu. Didn't talk to every state agency out there, didn't get responses from ones we reached out to. I tried to find like size or similar disciplined agencies out there. Some didn't respond back. So based on the responses I got and the time frame for y'all's first meeting, that's what we went with. So that was the initial challenge. We didn't get a lot back from those requests. I even reached out to the Sunset staff for ideas, and they said, well, this is a request we've put on a lot of agencies. I said, well, I've heard that, and they're cheering us on and what we're doing. and they said that didn't surprise them that we heard that, but they really didn't offer any suggestions on where we could go to find something.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions or comments?
I have a question.
Sure.
Is there a reason for the lapse of 2 years, or is that necessary? Was that requested by Sunset? What's the basis for that?
It was not. I just took that from other bylaw languages that I'd seen.
That's the one that gives me a source of concern just based on the current committee makeup and the long-term servants that sit on those committees. I'd hate to see them go away because that lapse of 2 years. I would be surprised if they came back. And that's my only issue, really, that I see. I'd like to see the lapse of 2 years go away. Term limit, I think, is totally applicable. I sit on the North Central Texas Council of Governments. We have a term limit, but there's no lapse. As long as you continue to serve and you're reelected, then you continue to serve. It's not a state agency, obviously. That'd be my only suggested change.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
I will say, having talked with Pat McAuliffe, there was a change that when it came back from the AG about ad hoc committees. The AG felt that on all the other committees, the commission was choosing their memberships versus for the ad hoc committees, when the language was first written, that was delegated to the committee chairs. I think in hindsight, we probably should go back to having the committee chairs pick that one for just the ad hoc committees, seeing how they're going to meet for just a specific period and purpose, but still have them come up to the commission to get approved. But everything else would be approved prior for committee membership. And I didn't change that because I left it the way it was because I'd already given it to the chief here, but that's one change that I would like to make as well.
Commissioners, what's your pleasure? What would you like to do moving forward?
Do we want to go over the letter from Chief Pena, Chairman? Would you like me to read it, or how do you want?
Sure.
Okay. Can everybody hear me okay? All right. Chief Pena from the Houston Fire Department has requested the following. Dear Texas Commission on Fire Protection, we'd like to provide the following written feedback for agenda item 18 regarding advisory committees for the upcoming Thursday, October 28, 2021, Texas Commission on Fire Protection hearing. although the initial proposed bylaws are a solid first step in complying with Senate Bill 709 of the 87th Legislature regular session, we are requesting consideration of the following recommendations to improve overall administration and transparency. Texas Government Code Section 2110.002 specifies advisory committee members must provide a balanced representation between the industry or occupation and consumers of services provided. In the public sector, especially in the fire service, defining consumers of services provided may be difficult. The National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, has stakeholder defined on over 15 separate standards, all extending participation to contributors from outside the fire service. The Wingspread 6 conference report, supported by the International Association of Fire Chiefs, IAFC, and International Association of Firefighters, IFF, has stressed the importance in the fire service of building stronger relationships with stakeholders, including researchers, developers, and industry representatives. The impact of rules and requirements adopted by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection affects stakeholders beyond those directly regulated by the Commission. We recommend including a wider range of participants in the listed committees to account for the diversity of stakeholders affected by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. Additional perspectives may be essentially beneficial for the functions currently conducted by the Firefighter Advisory Committee and the Health and Wellness Committee. Regarding advisory committee meetings, communication and transparency would be enhanced by formally adopting a practice that follows the Firefighters Advisory Committee example. The committee regularly posts online information on committee member participation agendas and meeting recordings. We recommend all committees follow the same format. The investment made by these advisory committees is invaluable. Their work also sets the agenda and frames the discussion when rule changes are discussed by Texas Commission on Fire Protection meetings. We applaud the proposal's recommendation to have additional meeting information and video conferencing available, but would like the Commission on Fire Protection to take an additional step of having all advisory committees recorded and posted on its public website. The information will help interested parties in developing well-formed public input ahead of commission hearings. Finally, we request that the bylaws governing Texas Commission on Fire Protection be incorporated into its administrative rules. This would effectively mean that changes in individual advisory committees, including their purpose, tasks, reporting requirements, and membership, will be subject to the public input process in rulemaking as defined in Texas Government Code Chapter 2001, Health and Human Services Commission accomplishes this in 1 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 351. So they were just asking for a couple of additional steps added into the process.
More on the back.
Yes, there is. We sincerely hope that these suggestions are considered in earnest in the upcoming commission meeting. These reforms will help the Texas Commission on Fire Protection align itself with the philosophy that responsibility for providing protection from fire and other hazards that threaten the public safety is a cooperative effort among these commission citizens, the commission, citizens, all branches of fire service, local government, and other state agencies. It's signed by Chief Brady.
Great suggestions. It goes to what I thought objective two, which was this representation and participation across the stakeholders.
Sure.
If y'all may, I would like to reach out to Chief Pena and ask him how the verbiage needs to be different. Because it does read any person, association, corporation, partnership, or other entity having interest in the above related or recited objectives shall be eligible for membership. So I'll figure out what's missing in that line.
Okay. Yeah. Is that something you might could do and be prepared for us to discuss at the workshop in January?
Absolutely.
I think that would be great.
Absolutely.
Again, we didn't get here overnight. I'm not expecting us to fix it overnight, but I certainly think that we're on a very well-defined pathway and we're going to get there. I mean, it's just going to take a little time. And I appreciate the patience of the fire service with us while we work through this.
And I would just offer up to the audience, if you have a suggestion, please shoot me an email. I will look at it and talk it with the other commissioners to get it included. I want y'all's input. It belongs to y'all, not me. So I want to get it right.
Can you hear me now?
No.
Sorry.
That's better.
So I'm just saying, I strongly encourage anybody out in the system to send me an email with your input so that we can consider and put it in there. This is written for y'all, not me. I want it to make it compliant with the law, obviously. I want to make it good for the agency to execute, that there's flexibility and it's not so rigid. And I do want to encourage participation and representation across the state.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Commissioner Copeland, for reading that letter from Chief Pena. Chief Wisco.
Mr. Chairman, to Chief Pena's point as well in his letter, I think the original intent all along was once these recommendations are ready, we would insert them somehow into 421 as a rule, so that moving forward, it's part of the rule process, and it would have to, any changes would have to come through here and be part of the rule revision process. So, whenever you all are done with this, that document would come to us. We'll put it in the proper format for the rules and bring it back as a proposal, and it'll go through the rulemaking cycle at that point. So we're nowhere close to done with this, obviously.
Sure.
There's still plenty of time for discussion and input and changes.
Legal counsel.
Hi. The OIG was mentioned a few times, so I wanted to say that was me, just me. I did track some changes to it, and I submitted it to the chair. I just want you guys to know that the copy you're seeing doesn't have my recommended legal changes in it. There were some citation things that I think are important that you guys get, you know, corrected it in the final version, but I just want you to know that this is pre my comments, the copy you have in your packet.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, certainly a work in progress, and I appreciate you adding that. Yeah. So that we know. Okay. All right, commissioners, anything else on item 18? Okay, we're at that pivotal time of the day where we need to decide if we're going to stop for lunch and take a little bit of a break. I realize we've been going for over an hour and a half, or we're going to try and push through. So I'm good either way. I could certainly use a break if the rest of the commissioners are willing.
Absolutely.
Yes. In the audience? All right, let's just go ahead and we'll stop here and take a break. We will resume at 1:15. Be sure to turn your mics off.
Take lunch? Well, I think it's like a break for about, okay. Break for all of them. I got
you. Well, I thought we were almost done. That's why I was getting out of here.
Sir, they're saying that.
And the Texas Commission on Fire Protection is back in session. Commissioners, when we left off at lunch, had just completed item number 18 on the agenda. Before we open up item 19, I would like to just make the other commissioners aware that Commissioner Sharma was required to leave because of a work commitment, so she will not be participating in this afternoon's session. So I would ask that you consider an excused absence for her, and I'll entertain a motion for that.
So moved, sir.
I have a motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Big ball.
Agenda item 19, fee amount for certificates.
Mr. Chairman, I'm the one who asked for this item to be placed on the agenda, and I actually believe that Chief Wisco's addressed some of these aspects already, but in totality, what I'm trying to find out is there an opportunity for us to reduce the current certification costs, certification and recertification costs for the firefighter certification? When we talked over the last several meetings about the amount of pass-through money we have that goes back to the state, I want to see if there's an opportunity. Obviously, that's a legislative issue. If there's an opportunity to reduce that or redirect what the needs are. So to get there, a lot of feedback on the mic. So to get there, can you guys hear me still over there? All right. So to get there, I think what we need to do is go ahead and we already get the budget from y'all, but look at the budget, what your total costs are. I also want to know what your total needs are. As we talked about, we understand the challenges of moving forward with additional staffing in the state environment that has to be approved by legislature. But I don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse. In other words, I don't want to advocate for reducing fees. Then that puts you in a position where you're not going to be able to hire the additional personnel that you need. And so I think between looking at what the needs are of that and moving forward within the next state legislative process, we might have the opportunity. You know, Chief, you didn't want me talking about this. There was other ways.
it's your force field interfering with it.
But I think there might be an opportunity here for us to look at what the needs are and have a good package to be moved forward to legislature, both to address your staffing needs and also a realistic reduction in the fees for service. And I know that you told me one of the components of that was what you asked to be passed today, which was an increase in the IFSAC fees that would allow you to take in a little bit more funding on that model.
Right. And I think the attorney has something to add to that piece for this whole discussion.
Hi, guys. Rosalind Hunt speaking. So in terms of the fees increase or cost, I just wanted to make sure you guys are aware. There was some legislation that was passed in the 2017 that almost in effect freezes agencies' ability to raise costs on regulated persons at 2017 levels. And the way it does that is whenever you're making a new rule, and if it includes a cost on regulated persons, then you have to repeal or amend another rule to reduce that cost so that it's equal. So like the one today that was approved to increase it by $15, you'd have to reduce $15 from somewhere else unless there was an exception. And a couple of the common exceptions are if the cost is not on regulated persons, if it was required by legislation, and I think there was another one that if the rule is necessary to protect the health, safety, and welfare of residents of the state. So there are a few exceptions to this one-in, one-out rule. That's essentially what it's called. But the statute, the language basically says, if a rule imposes a cost on a regulated person, unless or before the effective date of the proposed rule, the state agency must repeal a rule that imposes a total cost on regulated persons that is equal to or greater to the total cost imposed on regulated persons, or amends a rule to decrease the total cost imposed on regulated persons by the amount that is equal to or greater to the... You guys get the point. It's But that is to say, when you're thinking about reducing the cost to regulated person, that may have the effect in the future of you not being able to increase a cost because you're sort of capped unless one of those exceptions apply. For instance, the legislature may give you some new responsibility, authority, and maybe some money to go along with it, maybe not. But anyways, you guys have any questions? So that comes into play when you're proposing a rule to change a fee. And then you have to explain that to in your preamble how you're accounting for those costs.
So much like a city council member has to say, although this isn't a tax increase, this is a tax increase. Right. Yeah. So I think what I would ask is that staff at least provide. I hate to keep piling things onto our next workshop, commissioners, but and maybe that term in January is too soon to get this worked through, given the holidays and everything. But if we get the overall financial needs of the organization, what those look like, what we're bringing forward in certification costs, and we can weigh that out against it, so we can make an informed decision. I think what you just said, basically. $120,000, we could reduce the fee cost by $120,000, remain net neutral, which would be acceptable to the state. But the challenge then comes forward is if there's ever a need to increase those costs, that's quite the uphill battle. Would that be a correct summary?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Okay. I just want it looked at. I know, you know, it was a substantial, as most of us know who've been around for a while, it was a substantial jump when it went from $25 to $85, and then we got to move back down to $75, and that's where it's sitting right now. So I think it's worthy of us to at least look at and weigh into and have an opinion on.
All right. Well, we'll put together, obviously, the current fee schedule. What I see is our agency needs moving forward. What our abilities with fees are versus what the legislature would have to do, and then taking in mind this rule that she just talked about. But I we'll bring all that back. I'll try to have something ready for you in January, or at least have you some kind of update on where we're at with that. But I think we can have something for you. At the same time, though, I think in line with what she just told us, maybe we ought to slow down the IFSAC fee thing and let's do all this at one time, so that we don't get the cart in front of the horse here on something.
So I have a question then. Yes. So what I heard was a fee on a regulated person. This fee is not part of the regulation. It's voluntary on their part. They don't have to do it. So I don't see how that would apply.
I mean, that could be an argument that we'd make.
That's what
I'm
trying to do.
Right. So you're saying it doesn't apply to a fire?
No one is required to pay that fee in any way, shape, or form. It's voluntary on their part if they want that seal.
They are regulated, but it's not a required certification.
I mean, that could be an argument that we make that it's why it's not a cost on regulated persons. And so one way to do that is, well, I would prefer to discuss this in executive session. So if we could add that to item, I'd tell you my opinion, but I'd rather not do it here.
Sure, sure.
That's fine.
So
we can revisit that.
Yeah, if you just add this item to closed session for legal counsel, then we can talk about it then.
Okay.
If y'all don't mind.
Okay. I'm talking about it.
I agree.
Thank you very much.
Okay. But
I've made some notes, and I'll bring something back for you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief.
I put this to agenda item number 20, matters from the agency chief. A, decisions of agency chief in contested cases and consent orders. B, report on form J-5 separation of license. C, status regarding division functions, multi-part. Update on agency organizational changes, training approval and testing, test administered, training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits. Certification and professional development, training applications, IFSEC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource requests. Compliance, biennial inspections, compliance officers training, issues involving regulated entities, and information technology, including public website design, FARM, and FIDO improvements, CAPS, central accounting payroll personnel system, IT security policy, and service requests.
All right, so some good news. A, there have been no decisions on contested cases because we haven't had any, so we can move on. B, that should read the F5 separation license. So we had a request to look at a form that TECO uses, basically a reference form. I reached out to Kim Vickers, the executive director of TECO. We had a long conversation about it. He offered and is here today to kind of provide his knowledge of that and his opinion of that for us, whether we move forward with something like that or not. So if you want to hear from him, he's in the audience.
Sure, absolutely.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Kim Vickers. I'm the executive director of the Commission on Law Enforcement. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm pretty outspoken. and I have some, I could probably talk for an hour on the F5 form with the commission but I'll try to keep it. I know you've been here all day. I'll try to keep this brief. The F5 form with the commission was started in 2005 with the idea of trying to identify the term they used a lot at that time was gypsy cops, or identify officers that were concerns about behavior and their suitability for the job when they were terminated from one agency and looking to hire on elsewhere. So it was a form that was created to that every time an officer separated from an agency, the agency was required to complete this form, submit it to TCLOSE at that time, and that would be available to any future agencies, subsequent agencies that might look to hire that officer. Great in theory, and it started out the first year or two doing pretty well. In all frankness, the next session that came up, the union got involved with tweaking it and starting to change it. That form has evolved now into something that over the last 3, maybe 4 sessions, we have fought tooth and nail to get rid of. Not the F5 itself. We need the separation form because we need to know in our database when somebody leaves an agency, because we keep up with where they're appointed and then when they leave that agency. But the designations on it, our designations currently are honorably discharged, generally discharged, or dishonorably discharged. You cannot have a document like that that has an impact on an officer's future hireability without having due process. So if you're going to do this, you will have due process, which with us is through the State Office of Administrative Hearings. And I'll cut to the chase and tell you where this has evolved to where we are right now. And I've said everything I'm going to say here in front of the legislature when I've testified before the legislature, so it's a little blunt, but I'm going to tell you where we are. It has devolved into, or evolved, if you will, into a document that is used by plaintiff attorneys to try to find inroads into suing cities and agencies for wrongful termination and to try to get their officers, protect their officers. I will say in some instances that may be justified because I've seen officers bludgeoned with these things through political means. I've seen times when chief administrators get upset with an officer that's leaving the agency, give them a dishonorable, and knowing that that may pretty much kill their career from that point on. But what I see more than that are officers that are problem officers that what I see pretty much every day is they get terminated, an attorney. They get an attorney to represent them at the SOA hearing, but the attorneys that where they've come to is go back to the city manager or to the county judge and the city attorney, and they say, look, we're going to sue because of wrongful termination. We're going to come after you on this. No matter what the facts of the case are, we're going to do it. Well, then they say, but I'll tell you, we'll do this for you. We'll make a deal with you that if you'll let my client come back in and resign rather than be terminated, and if you'll change that designation to honorable, we won't sue. Well, the city manager looks at it as a business decision, okay? It's going to cost the city or it's going to cost the county, if they're the ones defending it, a lot of money to defend it. Whether you win the case or not, it's going to potentially cost, the propensity for it to cost a lot of money is there. So they make a business decision. They order the chief, or they county judges can't order the sheriff, but they can strongly suggest that they go in and comply with that. You'll change this. You'll bring them back in. You'll let them resign rather than terminate, and you'll give them an honorable. And they don't give the if it's a chief, especially where the city manager is his or her boss, they don't give them a choice on that. So they make that change. When they do, that officer goes on down the road with an honorable discharge from that location, and I can pull up officers where I know for a fact that has happened in multiple locations. They start to get in one place, and they play this game and get out from under it, go to the next place, play this game, get out from under it, and move on. To make it as succinct as possible here, this has evolved into something that is not good for law enforcement. It doesn't do what it was intended to do, and we have been trying to get rid of the designations for a long time now, and that's the sheriffs, the chiefs, the constables, us all lobbied this last year, or all worked with the legislature, I should say, this last year to try to get those designations taken out. The only ones fighting for it are the unions. And the unions are pretty powerful. Law enforcement unions in Texas are pretty powerful, and they're doing a real good job. They do a good job at what they do, and they're doing a good job of keeping this going. And so I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to try to advise you whether to do it or not to do it. I'm simply trying to give you what it is for us and what it has turned into for us and warn you of potential pitfalls that you can have. The idea behind it is awesome, where you can identify problem employees for future hiring and try to make sure that there's something there that can try to give more insight when you're hiring people. And that part of it is good, but it didn't stay that way very long, and now it is turned into a real issue with us that we're trying to get out from under. So if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them, but that's in a nutshell where we are with the F5.
Commissioners, any questions or further discussion? Thank you for being here and sharing that information. I think that's very valuable insight.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chief Vickers. When we talked about it, he offered to come tell you all that. I could have repeated it, but he said it'd probably be easier for him just to tell you.
Thank you. Thank you for making that happen.
All right. C,
try not to get too long-winded, but that's a few things to pass out just for you to see and keep up with what we're talking about. There's been a few organizational changes around here as we're trying to catch up or maybe get away from some of the old ways of doing things and try to modernize a little bit. First, I want to talk about some title changes or some references. For HR purposes, when we sign a piece of paper or somebody gets a pay increase or a job change, the titles will stay the same. So on a HR document, I'm still the executive director. But as we've been going around talking to folks in these regional meetings and talking here, there's always confusion about who does what at the commission and all, because you've got executive director and you've got division managers and this and that and the other. So we're a fire service entity. So we made some changes here after talking to HR and a few other folks. So we changed our title just so that the fire service knew a little better about who they were talking to and how we were structured. So I am, by reference, the agency chief. We created a deputy chief position, and I want to talk about that in a minute, but that is now Cliff Grant, and he's over professional standards. So that came about because there's a state law that talks about ex parte decision making, and essentially what that means is, as the executive director, I'm supposed to make a decision or rule on a contested case. So that item A under this is contested cases and decisions. So if one of our divisions, let's say the compliance division for an example, makes a decision against a department and they assess a penalty, they make that decision, that compliance division chief makes that decision. At some point, he may want some help from his supervisor. So when I first got here, he reported directly to me as the director. So if I assisted him in that decision he was making, and then that department appealed that appeal process was appealed to me as the agency director, and I'm supposed to make a decision. Well, I already was biased to it because I participated in the decision to do whatever it was we did. Well, there's actually a state law about this that I can't be involved at that decision-making level. I have to make a decision when it's contested. So this came up in some discussions during Sunset, and it came up at some different meetings. So I went back in time, talked to Deborah, talked to some other people that worked here previously, and at one time, 11 years ago, there was, for a long period of time, a deputy director of the agency because of this state law. And for whatever reason, that position was eliminated over the years. So to be compliant, it made sense to me to bring that position back so that we could meet the intent of this law, or else we'd find ourselves basically making decisions on contested cases and then having that challenge, which is just going to cost us more money down the road. So we reorganized a little bit. Cliff is now the deputy chief over professional standards. What that includes is compliance, certification, training, and we put public information under that because our educational efforts really derive from those other three areas. So Cliff is pretty much the number two guy. He assists those division chiefs in making any decisions about cases out there and somewhat serves to shield me. And then when it becomes contested or when there's a matter that is going to reach that level, I can go to them and then get educated and then I'll make a decision on that at that point. So we promoted Cliff. That led to needing to fill that certification division chief position. We elevated Terry Youngblood. In all of this transition, Paul Maldonado, who you saw earlier this morning, made the decision to go ahead and retire. He was at that point. He could stay another year. He could go. He decided it was a good time to go. He left. So Rick Wallace has been selected as the new division chief over compliance. Rick was already a compliance officer and has been for a number of years. So Rick has stepped up into that role. And at the same time, looking at the agency and our operations, we clearly have several areas where we're falling short. But one of the areas where we're struggling at significantly was in compliance, simply because we continue to see new regulated entities out there every year. I mean, you've got more and more ESDs becoming paid fire departments every year. They fall under our purview once they start hiring paid staff. So there's more departments that are regulated need to be inspected. I told you earlier that we rely on our compliance guys to actually proctor exams out there. So they're getting pulled away from doing inspections to go deliver exams. That's starting to create a backlog of our inspections. So we had a need to bring back another compliance region that has been kind of grayed out and covered by other compliance officers. But to open another region, we needed another compliance officer. So we reclassified a position that we felt internally wasn't quite necessary anymore. It could be handled by a couple other people, and it was curriculum development. There were kind of two people doing that, and we really only needed one because testing and curriculum does a lot of that. So we reclassified that position as a compliance officer. Today, that position's vacant. The application process is open for two compliance officer positions. One to replace Rick because he is now the compliance chief, and then this new compliance officer position. We hope to have those filled and bring those guys on by January, start training them, and push them out. All that said, we're in flux, but we've got some good people in places they need to be, and we're starting to build up and hopefully make some improvements in some areas we're struggling in. Knowing full good and well, we got areas we need to start working on, but you got to fix one at a time. So that's what we're trying to do here. As far as office operations go, the COVID's been around just under 2 years now. Obviously, March of 20, you know, the state said everybody needs to go work from home, protect your employees, stay at home. So we did that a while. The vaccine came, and then we had this second surge through the summer, and we're just kind of on the tail end of that. We found that our day-to-day operations were working. And while I'll go back and say our systems aren't perfect, they were working to the best of our ability with folks working remotely and being able to work by phone and from computer and all that. So to protect our employees while they're making their decisions whether to get vaccinated or not, we transitioned more to it's up to you and your manager whether you come work from the office 5 days a week or you work from home or there's some in between of that. And so that's what you see. We've got employees that are in here every day. It's a limited number of people working in the office. We've got some that work from the office 2 or 3 days a week and work from home the other two. It's kind of floating, but it seems to be working. What we're leaning towards is January, we're bringing everybody back to the office at least 3 days a week. And we're gonna try to make that model work. Clearly, we got to monitor the situation of the world, what's going on with COVID. If we start to see another increase in illness and exposures and all that, we're gonna have to balance that and see what's going on. I haven't gotten into the you got to get vaccinated. Are you vaccinated? It's none of my business. We're not going there. At the end of the day, we work for the governor. He's made it very clear. So I don't ask. I'm not going to say I don't care, but it's not our business. You keep working. You keep doing what we ask you to do, and it doesn't matter to me where you work from as long as we're getting our work done. The managers, the division chiefs, they do a great job monitoring this. We haven't seen a lot of problems. The problems we've had, we've addressed, and it's continued to work. We talked about testing and training and record reviews a while ago, so I'm going to pass that. Just for your knowledge, I talked a little bit about adding a compliance region. Here's a map for you to look at, and you'll kind of be able to see that. You see the compliance report here, and you can see what all these guys have done. One of the things listed in there are the regional meetings. And again, I think all of you are well aware of what we've been doing with that. But I'm going to pass around where all we've done these meetings. And I think I just want to ask one question because we're at the point we're starting to plan next year's already. from the staff standpoint, from my standpoint, we have found this to be very successful. It's providing us face time. We're going out to our stakeholders. We're giving them the opportunity to meet us, to know who we are, to talk to us, to tell us their concerns. We're hearing them. We're coming back here. We're trying to address it. It has improved our communications. I think it has improved our relationships across the state of Texas. The cost has not been terrible. We've tried to couple these meetings. We're trying to knock out two at a time. So we go to the DFW area and we'll do a meeting in Richardson. We'll spend the night. We'll knock one out over in the Fort Worth area, and then we come home. We'll go down to the Houston area. We'll do one there. We do one in Beaumont. We come home. So we're trying to be smart about the way we're doing it. As we move forward into next year, I guess what I'm looking from you all is, what are you hearing? What are your thoughts on these regional meetings? Is it worthwhile to continue doing it from where you sit, from what you're seeing? I've told you what we're seeing, what I believe, but I really want some input from you guys. Is it working?
Mr. Chairman, from the meeting that I was able to attend, there were numerous people that went, this has never happened. You're a real person. You came to us to you know, and we and Mike was really, really receptive to, you know, and we just shut up and said, we're here to hear. What do y'all got to say? And they just started popping questions. It was extremely, extremely good and well received. You know, just they couldn't believe that there were that many people. And there were like four of us in the building, you know. And please come back. You know, we'll bring more people next time. And it was a gamut from, probably 100 miles north of me to Midland. And they just, you know, Lubbock said, open the doors and let everybody come in. And we had a heck of a time. We weren't there a long time, but there was a lot of stuff, you know, covered, a lot of information given out that they were very receptive to.
And I can share a similar experience with the Northeast region of the Fire Chiefs Association. We had a meeting on the list. I forgot what the date was, back in May, I think, and very well attended and nothing but accolades for the presence of the Fire Commission staff being there to answer questions firsthand. It was very similar. People just were like floored, like, my gosh, nobody's ever been here like that before. Mm-hmm. So the willingness to come out and get on the road like that, I think, speaks volumes across fire service. So thank you guys for doing that.
And Mr. Chairman, I would have to say the same. I attended two in Region 7, San Marcos and Corpus Christi. And without fail, everybody was happy that the commission was there to answer their questions directly. I thought there was good interaction. Your staff interacted very well with the people that were there. In the Corpus Christi area, there were some heavy lift questions that had to be addressed. And I applaud you guys for taking that on and getting back with them, because I talked to a few of the chiefs who asked those questions. They said you guys circled back with them. So I applaud you for that. But foundationally, I think it's something that we need to continue, because it's really getting us back out to the constituents and the folks that we're serving.
I would definitely agree. I went to had a chance to, for a short time, just basically to get introduced, and had to leave the Richardson meeting, but the next day got to be there for the entire Fort Worth meeting, and I thought it was fantastic. Good feedback. We had members of all ranks in the room, number of chiefs, but even the chiefs were able to bring some of their staff that may not be able to come down to Austin for these quarterly meetings. Our staff, your staff of the commission, I agree, did a fantastic job answering questions, making themselves available. I think this was a great opportunity because we were able to capitalize upon everyone being excited about getting to see each other in person again. So we took advantage, you took advantage of that opportunity for the goodwill on your part, for people to appreciate that, and I applaud you for that. That was a great idea. What Commissioner Coatney said, I couldn't agree more. Whatever the investment was and will continue to be, I think that's a good use of our resources, of your resources, of your budget right now, because it was fantastic. It was well received by the constituents, as I said before.
Okay. Well, we're working on next year already. We're going to try to continue to make it productive. We want to do two at a time, you know, one night of overnight stay somewhere, so that we're not out of the office all the time. I mean, you look at that list, there's a lot of travel. We saw every corner in the state of Texas and every point in between. We want that to be productive. So we're not going to drive through 12 communities to get to one. We're going to do two meetings. We'll stop in the middle of both of those and try to get them all. But as long as they're productive, and this first round was great, I want to go back. I want to continue to do that. We're going to hit all the different conferences and stuff. As they invite us, we'll be there to interact with them. We got a great idea that I want to follow up on with Chief Stevens and the fire chiefs. We're fixing to do a program with administrative assistants and stuff. You know, a lot of the FIDO stuff, a lot of the injury reporting, is not the fire chiefs. It's the staff, the administrative staff. Maybe there's something we could do to help as far as just helping them better understand how to do that or how to navigate that system or something. So there might be some way we could contribute to something like that, and we can talk about that. But at least from our standpoint, we thought it was successful. But I did want to, I just kind of wanted a little feedback there, because if you all don't think it's working, I don't want to keep doing it. That's why I just wanted a little feedback there. We've identified a couple other rather serious problems right now. We've talked about a few today already. But we're wrapping up. Sunday night is the end of the annual renewal period. For years, certification renewal occurs in the month of September and October. All of you who are fire chiefs or manage agencies know that your budget's put together in March and April, and it starts October 1, and the Fire Commission wants money for all your certified people in September and October. And that's a programmed cost, and you know what that's going to be. We ask everybody to renew in September and October. We went from having 10, 12,000 certified firefighters in Texas back 20 years ago. We're at 36,000. I mean, we're rapidly approaching 40,000 folks. We've got technology. And Commissioner Coatney made a comment earlier that I wanted to come back to. We need technology here. We need more technology. The technology we have was mandated by the legislature. And I hate to, I'm going to sound like a fireman here for a minute. It was an unfunded mandate back in 13 and 15. They built our current FIDO and farm system essentially in the garage of our IT team. And they're holding it together. And these guys are staying up all night long sometimes every week. And in this renewal season, and it's only my second one, but this renewal season has been a nightmare. The system's been overloaded. And it's not the IT guys' shortcoming. It's not one piece of the system. It's the whole system. It can't handle the load of all the departments logging in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and trying to renew certification. So we've had challenges with invoices getting zeroed out. The El Paso Fire Department tried to renew on the 27th of September, and they got everything ready, and they hit print invoice, and it zeroed it out. And they'd already been to council. They've already approved the spending that amount of money and followed all the steps, and they didn't have an invoice to submit, and it was the end of the budget year. And they called us in a panic. We worked with them. We got it fixed. We were able to walk through the process. They didn't have any late fees, and we fixed it. That happened 22 more times. So what we had for the next 2 weeks was our IT team of three guys were working basically round the clock for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, front-loading invoices for departments of a certain size, because we recognized the problem, but we couldn't identify how to prevent the problem. So they were preloading the invoices so that wouldn't happen. We overcame that problem by their work. Another problem started creating. It started dropping just individuals out of the system, or drop particular certifications out of the system. And we don't have funds for the technology. I mean, we got money here and there, but these guys they're having to develop this. So they're getting beat up. The staff's getting phone calls and getting hammered. Your system's a mess. We can't get our renewals right. What are y'all doing over there? So our staff's complaining to the IT guys, who are tired because they've been up for 3 days, and they're frustrated. And we just can't win. So we have decided, all right, we decided this about 3 weeks ago. We're going to get into November. We're going to take about 2 or 3 days to catch our breath. And we're going to get to work on a new renewal process. We got to be respectful of everybody's budget process. We need to be respectful of what our system can handle. And we got to find a way that over the course of 6 to 8 months, within everybody's budget season, we can renew everybody without overloading the system with what we have right now until we can get a better system. I don't have all the answers for that, but we've got ideas, whether we do it by region, we pull out the bigger departments and we do them separate from the smaller departments. But those are some of the challenges we've got going on here right now. Because, back to fees, we have to pay the state X amount of money at the end of every budget year. If we don't have those certification fees coming in, you don't have certified firefighters, and we can't meet our requirement for the money we're supposed to generate. So we got to fix this problem here pretty quick. So we're going to get to work on that and try to come up with some solutions that work. Moving forward, we're going to bring that back here. What that may mean is that the Longview Fire Department no longer renews in October. You might not renew till January. Hopefully, you still got that money in your budget. It just changes what month in your budget cycle that you're going to send that money to the state of Texas. We're going to have to try things like that and see if we can't figure this out. So you're going to hear more about that as we move forward. But I wanted you to make aware of it because it is a huge problem. And I'm really surprised I didn't hear more from any of you all as that was happening, because it was every day. And Cliff and the IT guys and the certification folks were just getting hammered day in and day out for 2 or 3 weeks with this. Beat that horse, it's dead. We talked about technology. Last problem I'll bring up, and we'll move on. We're seeing a huge problem on the compliance side out there, and I don't think this will surprise anybody. Protective clothing. 1851 puts a 10-year life on protective clothing. The manufacturers are telling departments now, we can't get you new gear. It's going to be 8 months. It's going to be a year before we can get you new gear. So departments are starting to get up against the wall. Well, they got gear that's about to hit its 10-year retirement, mandatory retirement date, and they can't replace it. So that's going on. Our compliance team is working with that. They're trying to deal with that problem. Departments are asked to, when they're found to be in violation, they have to submit a plan of how they're going to correct that. But, guys, these departments aren't creating these problems. I mean, the manufacturers that sell the gear, it's their problem, and we're stuck with trying to enforce the rules and keep these folks in business. So that's something else you're going to hear about, because that's happening out there right now to a lot of departments. It's a common occurrence as we speak. So we're trying to address that the best way we can and keep everybody safe. So just wanted you to be aware of what all is going on out there, because there is a lot happening here on a daily basis, aside from what you already know about. So. I think that's it as far as the agency. The last thing I've got here, Chief Wilson, this is what we had corresponded about. I'm going to pass around a kind of what we talked about in the last workshop, but it's a plan to address all the sunset recommendations. And so what I've put together is a document. It's 6 pages, but it's really easy to follow. It starts with the recommendation from Sunset. It has an action plan, and it has a timeline. I want to emphasize these are suggestions from staff. Any of this can be manipulated any way we need to manipulate it. A lot of this is already in progress. Some of this we've talked about today. But I wanted to hand you a document so that you can at least look at it. We can discuss it today. We can discuss it next month or next meeting. But in about June or July, Sunset's going to come back to us and say, it's been a year. Where are you at? What's your plan? I want to be able to present them this and have it refined with, here's what we've accomplished. Here's what we're working on now. Here's what we're still going to have to tackle. So, again, this is just a... These are suggestions, but any of this is open for discussion and refinement. So you're going to want more than just 30 seconds to look at it, I know, but I wanted to have it to you today so that we can discuss it moving forward. That is luckily all I got. We've covered most of it throughout the meeting.
Chief Wisco, thank you for that report. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Chief Wisco.
I don't have a question, but I make a nomination that we have an opportunity to review this and come back to it in the January meeting.
Sure, absolutely.
One thing in here, and let me, recommendation 1.2, so it's on page 1. I almost forgot about this, but talk about January. And I know the January workshop agenda is starting to fill up. You'll see a suggestion in here that Sunset recommended across the board commission member training annually, like refresher training, for all of you, just to kind of like what we did in April with when our new members got here. We're updating that new member training now, and what they've suggested is that we do that annually. What I suggested in this document is we could do something like that every January, because there's always a workshop before that January meeting. I don't see that being something that takes a long time. We could do a 30 or 45 minute training exercise, and we would check that box, but we could answer questions, talk about the rulemaking and the policy making and things like that. We could start that now. We could push that to April. We'd do whatever you want to do with it, but that is one of the Sunset recommendations, so I addressed it here with a suggestion to start that in January. That was before I knew that we were going to fill up our January workshop agenda so quick with other issues.
I'm all for striking while the iron's hot. I mean, if you've got something prepared or something in mind, let's kick it off starting in January and continue moving forward with checking these boxes for Sunset. I'm game. Let's move on with it.
Well, so we'll work on putting something together, and we'll knock it out first thing that morning, get it out of the way, and then we can focus on the other things we have that we want to work on.
Perfect.
Okay.
Commissioners, anything else?
Do we have a report on the injury and Mayday after action?
Yes, sir. And I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of got hung up on a word you used. You said expansive, and I panicked a little bit in there. But let me tell you.
That's in my notes. That's what I wrote down, okay. Expansive report.
So, any kind of information that comes to the agency obviously is subject to open records. Chief Kistner has brought this to the commission a couple of times about the near-miss reporting or the Mayday reporting. And Commissioner Jones, I don't want to overstep here, but I want to kind of give a highlight. In the last 435 committee meeting 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, this very topic came up. And I know they've engaged Chief Kistner again since then. But that committee right now is working on figuring out where to put such a requirement in 435 to require that reporting specifically. And I'm working with our IT staff and some other staff members on what that report would look like. So we're thinking something similar to the injury report, but somewhat scaled down. So we get some basic information that you would go into FIDO, submit the information, hey, we had a near miss, and it would come to somebody in staff. They would review it, determine if there needs to be follow-up or if there needs to be some kind of investigation, and we would go from there. The purpose of that, it's limited information. There would be limited information subject at that point to open records. But if we had to initiate some type of investigation, clearly that would lead to more information coming in. But I think the goal is to capture that for training reasons, data reasons. We want to know how many times firefighters are getting in trouble out there. At the same time, I think there was discussion, even looking into, you know, our current 2-in-2-out rule, ask for documentation when you have to make an exception to that rule. And so some of the conversation was even geared towards requiring documentation come to us when that exception has to be exercised. So I think the 435 committee is headed in the right direction with that. So my report is, I think we're going in the right direction, but I want to give them time to kind of navigate that and figure out where that's going to fit in 435. And so that's not really expansive, but it is. I think we're making some progress there. And I know they've reached back to Chief Kistner, and I think he's working with them on trying to do that. He was really excited when I talked to him the other day about the fact that it's being embraced and we're trying to do something with that. So.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions?
I
Agenda item number 21, personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the agency chief.
Okay, the time is 2:09 on October 28, 2021. At this time, the commission will go into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 551.074 to discuss two things. First being the matter of fees that was recommended by legal counsel. Agenda item 19. And then certainly agenda item 21. This is discuss personnel matters under item number 21. The commission requests that all non-commissioned members leave the room except for legal counsel, Chief Wisco, and Deborah Cowan. And so we'd appreciate it if you'd oblige that now. Thank you. For those of you that may be leaving, thank you for your attendance here today. Certainly means a lot. Appreciate the ones of you that stuck with us after lunch. Hey, Mark Lee. Appreciate everybody being here today. Commissioners, if you'll turn your microphones off.
The fire chief's with the entire fire service. He's conducted the regional meetings. One thing that's impressed me the most is that he identifies an issue before we hear about it, oftentimes for our constituents. So he's notifying us, and his staff is very responsive to our requests. So I'm very supportive of Commissioner Jones' recommendation.
Thank you for that. Commissioners, any other? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. First and second. Commissioner Jones and seconded by Commissioner Glenn.
Commissioners, if I can, I appreciate the support. It's unbelievable. And this is a great group of commissioners that all seem to be like-minded with the same vision, the same goal in mind, and that's to keep the firefighters of Texas safe. And it's been a pleasure this far, and I appreciate the support that you've shown me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay. Well.
Agenda item number 22, our favorite, adjourn the meeting. Motion to adjourn.
Okay. Have a motion and a motion by Commissioner Morgan, second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? Commissioners, thank you so much for your work here today. I know this was a little bit of a long meeting compared to how they normally go. I appreciate the time and effort you put into it and all the conversation. Enjoyed seeing everybody, and we'll see you again in January. Have a happy holidays. If I don't see you before, meeting's adjourned.
You're not going to bang the gavel?
Here you go.